Good morning, again. So today we'll be talking about oaths. Now before we get into that, I kind of want to introduce this topic a little bit by telling you something I've been reflecting on. For as long as I can remember, something that's been very important to me is the topic of Christian worship and Christian music. Right, and I would probably dare guess that many of you here will worship on your own time. We worship this morning, this is one of the major ways in which all of us worship today. But let me ask you a question to get you thinking this morning. How important do you think God has it for us? Like, how important is it for God that that when we sing these words and we say these things, do you think God takes them seriously? Right, so the words that we sing during worship, all the words that we've said, how closely do you think God will hold us to those things? Let me give you a couple examples. So first thing this morning, we sang this song that says that we're going to stand and we're going to lift up our hands. How many of you here stood and then lifted up your hands when you sang the song? Put your hand up. Like two people, okay? So why didn't we lift up our hands? We said we were going to lift up our hands. We didn't say we could lift up our hands. We didn't say we might lift up our hands. We said that we will lift up our hands, right? But none of us here did that. Let me give you a couple more. How many of you here have heard this song called Undignified by Matt Redmond? You know, I will dance, I will sing. Anybody heard this song? Who's heard this song? Put your hand up if you've heard this song. Okay. All right. So it seems like the only two people have heard this song, apparently. Not a lot of people like Matt Redmond. All right. How many of you here have seen somebody actually dance and sing after singing the song? Right? Not many people, right? And especially for those of you, specifically the two people who are brave enough to say that they have sang the song, again, if you want to do this, if you really want to live out your words, please videotape you dancing and singing at the same time. I will gladly come and watch. I might even pay a fee to do it. But these are words that we've said. Now, you know, we laugh about these things and we joke about them because they're funny, but in reality, we are the ones who are singing these songs, right? It's not just the two people that put their hands up. We sing songs all the time, and we're saying things that we are going to do because of what God has done, or we're going to do something because we've seen what God has really empowered in us. And let me give you two more songs, maybe in a more serious level. So there's a song that we sang on Friday called Take My Life and Let It Be by Francis R. Havergal. And one of the lyrics says, take my silver and my gold, not a mite would I withhold. Now, we sang this song on Friday, and we sang it very loudly, but have we really considered that if it came down to the cost of us giving up everything, draining all of our savings, draining all of our wealth, would we actually give up all of our wealth and all of our gold and silver if God had called us to do that for his ministry? Now, you might be cheeky and say, well, I have no silver or gold, so I've got nothing to give, right? I'm a poor, humble student. I don't have any of those kind of pieces. But that's not the point of the song. The point of the song is not to say, if I only have silver and gold, that's the only thing I'm going to give. What you're saying is, I'm going to give up all my wealth and riches, right? And I would not withhold anything if God calls it. Another very common song is by the Gettys, right? Speak, O Lord, right? And in this passage, it says, test our thoughts and our attitudes in the radiance of your purity. Are we really ready for God to do that? You know, we sing these songs, and especially in Speak, O Lord, we were telling God, test the thoughts that I have, you know, check to see that they are within what you desire, you know, test it by your purity. But do we really mean that? Do we really want God to do that? Are we honestly taking our entire lives and being like, these are things that I've said that I will do, and God, please take a look. Please help me to do these things. Do we really know what it means when we sing these songs? Or do we just sing them blindly? Now, I bring this up today, and I bring up the idea of song study not to shame anybody or not that it's just funny, but because to really just get this understanding of our words actually mean something. And especially because of our topic today, because we're talking about oaths, there's a couple things I want you to think about as we talk more about this topic. Firstly, I want you to consider, you know, do you take Do you think God takes the words that you're saying seriously? Do you think he holds you to those things that you say? Secondly, do you think that the things that come out of your mouth matter? And thirdly, if God so desired it from you, that if he thinks that your speech is wrong, are you willing to change those things because that is what God wants? So there's three things, right? Those are the three things that I really want you to think about today. And as we talk about this idea of oaths, I want you to be reflecting about this question about the things that you say. Do they matter? Does God care? And if God cares, are you willing to change? Let's go into the passage today. So, in verse 33, it says this. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but you shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. Let me just quickly recap how we've gotten to this point today. So we started the series on the Sermon on the Mount. We've talked about three out of six examples already about how God has exactly fulfilled the law and fulfilled the prophets. And specifically, we talk about the Sermon on the Mount. The thing that Jesus is trying to get across to all the people is that these are the things that he expects his disciples to live in this world. Okay, so as we're talking about the Sermon on the Mount, the major thing that he's trying to get across is that if you are a believer, this is how we expect you to live in this world today. And today, if you call yourself a Christian, and if I've exegeted this passage correctly, then what Jesus is calling you to do is to conform to the messages that you've heard that are within line of Scripture. You should be looking to conform your lives to what Jesus Christ has said. Now, these are not my words or any pastor's words. It's if we have spoken the truth, that this is what the passage actually says, each of us here needs to look at our lives to conform to what he is calling us to do. Now, in this passage today, in verse 33, Jesus quotes something that's probably fairly well known to people, right? So they've heard this before, basically saying that you shall not swear falsely, you should perform the things of the Lord that you've sworn. There's no specific passage in the Old Testament that kind of covers all of this together. He probably has a number of passages that have come together, and now he's just summarizing what the Old Testament says on this topic. But some passages he might be thinking about are like Leviticus chapter 19, verse 12, which says that... Could you just do the slides for me today? Would that be okay? Perfect. All right. So Leviticus 19, verse 12 says, "You shall not swear by my name falsely, and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." Probably also has in mind the third commandment here in Exodus chapter 20, verse 7. It says, "You shall not take the name of the Lord, your God, in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who will take his name in vain." And probably even has the ninth commandment in mind as well, "You shall not bear false witnesses against your neighbor," and this could be in view as well. Right, so we can see that Jesus isn't just coming up with these passages from nowhere. These are passages in the Old Testament, and what he has done is he has summarized them and just given you a very easy statement that we all can recognize and understand. Now, during this day, what is so interesting is that the Jews had already created an entire section on what to do with oaths, right? And they followed these things religiously. So we call this the Mishnah. And in the Mishnah, it's a Jewish authoritative document that kind of discusses how we need to follow the law and how we need to be based on what the law says. And one rabbi had to say this. He says, if you were to swear by Jerusalem, you're not bound by an oath. But if you swear towards Jerusalem, you're bound by that oath. Right, really interesting. Based on the wording, and it's only really like one or two words, it either makes an oath binding or not binding. And this is what the common belief in the day, that based on what kind of oath you swear, it could be binding, it could not be binding. Now you could imagine the kind of weird things that could happen from this, right? So basically, you could make oaths to people, and you know exactly that it's not binding, but you're going to make them to them anyway. Right, it's almost like when you play games, right? You wanna use your words in such a way to make somebody feel something or believe something, but realistically, you're trying to practice deceit. And these are really just games to you. And this is kind of what was happening in Jesus' day. And for Jesus, he's not going to have any of this. And he doesn't believe that any of his followers should have this as well. So he says in verse 34 to 36, he says this, "But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either in heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is the footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. What Jesus is saying is that by swearing by anything is swearing to God. Whether you invoke a sacred place like heaven or a sacred city like Jerusalem, you're actually invoking God's name, because in some way, God is behind everything. Even in verse 36, where it says, "And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black," he says that even your normal hair color is under God's ultimate power. Here Jesus is teaching us that if you swear by anything, you're actually swearing by God. And doing this is dangerous. Let me give you two reasons why I think this. So firstly, why I think that it's dangerous for us to swear an oath before God is, number one, is because we're calling God to judge. Right? We're calling God to mediate our oath. And ultimately, what you're asking God to do is use your perfect standard to judge the promises that I've made. Either these are things that I've promised that I'll do, or promised the things I'll do for you, or for other people. But God, you be the judge to see if I'm right or wrong. I want you to imagine if that were actually the case. If you were to stand before God at the end of time, and then he would ask you, how did you make good on this oath? And that he would judge you perfectly. So imagine even the song that we sang today, right? So you said that you stood and you lifted up your hands. How'd you do? Some of you would be like, 50%, right? I stood, right? I got the standing part right, so 50's a pass, so I think I did okay. But no, Jesus will hold you to the entire thing. You did not stand, you did not lift up your hands. Now, we didn't exactly make a promise to do these things, but just imagine if God held you to that standard. This is why when we talk about salvation without Christ is so scary. Right, because without Christ, God will judge us based on our conduct on earth against his perfection. And even if one thought or peep or anything that is not perfect, we are in danger of facing wrath. And we know, as Christians, we talk about this often, that without Christ and in our own being, we are sinful beings. Right, we fall short of the glory of God. And that, as Isaiah says, our greatest works are like filthy rags before him. It is hopeless and scary to ask God to judge in this way. This is why we should not invite God to judge, because there's danger of condemnation if we don't make perfect our oaths and our vows. Let me give you a couple passages to kind of more emphasize this point. Deuteronomy chapter 23, verses 21 to 23. If you make a vow to the Lord your God, you shall not delay fulfilling it, for the Lord your God will surely require it of you. You will be guilty of sin. But if you refrain from vowing, you will not be guilty of sin. You shall be careful to do what has passed your lips, for you have voluntarily vowed to the Lord your God what you have promised with your mouth. Also, in Numbers chapter 30, verse 2, if a man vows a vow to the Lord or swears an oath to bind himself by a pledge, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. I want you to remember the story in Judges chapter 11, and we just recently did Judges, right? It was a series that we recently did, and the story in chapter 11 is about the story of Jephthah, right? Where he says that, you know, if you give me victory, God, against the Ammonites, I will give you, or I will sacrifice to you the first thing that I see when I get home. Now, sadly, the first thing that he ends up seeing is his daughter, and he ends up giving his daughter to the Lord by burning her in a sacrifice. Now, however you feel about the story, about whatever Jephthah really should have done, the one thing that this story does get across is the seriousness of our vows and oaths and how careful we should be to make them. The second reason why I think it's not good or it's dangerous for us to swear to God is because we show a lack of reverence to God. Now, at first, this might not seem like a big deal, right? Like, people show a lack of reverence to things all the time. But specifically for a Christian, if we continue to show irreverence towards God, it tends to erode our faith. In fact, oftentimes, when we look at a lack of reverence, things start to creep up in our lives. Things start to become more prominent. Sin becomes more prominent in our lives when we show a lack of reverence. Because the thing is that we're moving our reverence from God and moving it towards, okay, well, I don't have to fear God. I'm not worried about him. Right? So you'll start to say and do things that are really, you really shouldn't be doing. So the first thing that usually happens when we give up reverence for God is that pride and rebellion creep in. If we look at the story in 2 Chronicles chapter 26 of Uzziah, who God had chosen and who had given him all the strength and power, and he was strong. Once he was strong in chapter 26, he became very prideful and rebelled against God by burning incense at the altar. And this brought upon God's judgment by afflicting him with leprosy. Pride and rebellion are something that's very, very close to home. And if we do not have a proper reverence or fear in God, we are asking for pride and rebellion to creep in. Secondly, I think that a lack of reverence towards God affects the way that we serve others. As Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21 says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. If you have no reverence for Christ, what does your submission to one another look like? Another key question is, I think that if we lack reverence towards God, our theology that governs our lives goes all wonky. And therefore, our entire life is completely up for grabs. Completely, there's something wrong with it if our reverence for God is gone. Look at Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7. The beginning of all knowledge is the fear of God, and fools despise wisdom and instruction. So there are a great many fears that we have if we give up reverence for God. And in fact, if we swear to God on a social level often, we're calling upon God's judgment and we're showing a lack of reverence. And these are two very dangerous things that we embark on. So I think it is clear from these passages that Jesus is calling us to give up social swearing. In this example, Jesus fulfills the law by telling us clearly what the original meaning of the commandment was supposed to be. Right? The original commandments, the third commandment about not using the Lord's name in vain, and the ninth commandment is that you should not use or make these oaths or make these promises that call upon a sacred object or call upon God, because ultimately it's always going to come back to God, and it is God who is going to judge. This means for us today that if you use words like I swear to God, or as God is my witness, or if you swear in your mother's grave, or any type of social swearing, we need to immediately remove these things from any discussions that we have today. And the reason is because these things offend God so badly that the Bible tells us that they are worthy of condemnation. Now, there's an important question that we need to ask here about, do all oaths or do we need to abolish all the oaths that we make? Some oaths that you might have in mind are things like, the oath that you take at a courtroom, right, to say that you're being honest. You might have to take an oath to become a citizen. You actually do have to take an oath to become a citizen. Oaths that doctors need to take, right, the Hippocratic Oath. And the question becomes, should we abandon these type of oaths as well? Right? Because this is a big question. In the history of Canada, and probably through the history of evangelicalism, we've had Christian brothers and other people who have claimed that they will not take oaths because the Bible says we should not take oaths. Right? In fact, oftentimes, when you think about what things that you guys are doing, you guys might have to take an oath. So my question is, do you guys do it? And is it okay? When the Bible uses the word all, we always have to be very careful in dealing with God's word here. Because if God intends for all to mean all circumstances, then no one has the right to ever change that. However, I spent the week kind of thinking about it a little bit more and praying through it. And I think what the Bible is trying to say here is that it's trying to teach us that when it's using the word all, it's limiting specifically to social swearing. And here are my reasons for that. Number one is that when we look at the oaths in the Old Testament, God actually demands an oath to be taken from people in the Old Testament. In Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 20, it says, "You shall fear the Lord your God, you shall serve him and hold fast to him, and by his name you shall swear." Right? So God is here calling people to make these oaths. Secondly, God himself makes oaths to his people in the Old Testament, as Hebrews chapter 6 tells us, "For when God made a promise to Abraham, since he had no one greater to by whom to swear, he swore by himself." And Paul, who we often read throughout this church, often invokes God's name, right? One example of this is in Romans chapter 1, verse 9, "For God is my witness, whom I serve with my spirit as in the gospel of his Son, that without ceasing I mention you." Right? So we can see throughout the Bible that God uses odes to call people to the truth, to call people to bear witness to the power of God, to use people to kind of test them in their truth. And so I think in the same way, when we look at this topic about taking odes, I think that I'm hesitant to say these things because we're talking about when Jesus says all, that we can take odes that call us to a standard of truthfulness. Right? So in the standard of court, I think it is okay. In citizenship, I think it is okay. I think specifically what it's talking about here is when you are using these words in a way that's almost irreverent, in a way that is almost very playful, right? That you actually aren't taking seriously the things that you're saying. This is why I think in verse 37, Jesus goes on to say here, let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. Now, as we look at the bigger picture of what Jesus is talking about here, you might be saying to yourself, yeah, I don't swear oaths. I don't have this problem, so this passage doesn't involve me. I can check out. In fact, there might be some of you guys up there right now probably who are just taking a nap because, all right, so the passage about oaths, I'm just going to take a nap for 20 minutes, and then when we get to the end, then we'll get back there. But I think that this passage actually talks about more than, it has a deeper meaning than just talking about oaths. I think what it's trying to say is that the greater context is that all Christians should do to the best of their ability, what they should be doing is to speak truth in all circumstances, or to be truthful in all circumstances. In this day and age that Jesus is talking to, people play games with the oaths in their day. And based on the wording, some oaths were binding and others aren't. This system of oath-taking promoted deceit and deception. And this is far and away from what God's intention was for his people and what they should be doing. In fact, Jesus thinks it is much better, and I think it is much better for all Christians, to just honestly say either yes or simply to say yes, or simply to say no. And if you say yes, you'll do something, or no, you will not do something. But the most important thing is, do not play games with your words. Do not be deceptive. Psalms 5:6 says this, you destroy those who speak lies. The Lord abhors the bloodthirsty and deceitful men. For us here today, there are lots of ways, probably little and big ways, in which truthfulness impacts our lives. And sometimes as we look at the things that we do in our lives, sometimes we look at circumstances and we look at situations and we're very careful about what exactly we say. So sometimes we tell part of the truth, right? So especially if you're about to get in trouble. Right. So if you're maybe if you're before a policeman or if you're before your parents and they ask you and basically like this car got wrecked, say like you drove a car into a ditch. Right. And you told him that. So basically what you're saying is that. So your parents come to you or the policeman comes to you and they ask you, how did the car get in the ditch? And you're like, well, my brother drove it. Right. It was him. But what you're not telling the policeman is that you're the one who instigated the idea to begin with, right? You were the one who goaded your brother into sending this car into a ditch, right? So you're telling the truth, right? I wasn't the one who drove the car, but you didn't tell the whole truth. So this is one way in which I think that we often use truth. Now, I have a number of ways in which I think we often use truth to try to benefit ourselves or try to use lies to benefit ourselves. So firstly, sometimes we use white lies to make our lives better. Or make our lives easier. I want you to picture the amount of conversations that you've had that you've wanted to end really quickly. Right? So they've been talking, and you really want to find a way to end this conversation. You're like, someone's calling on the other line, I got to get back to you, so why don't I call you back? So things like that, right? There oftentimes we kind of use these little lies to kind of get ourselves into better situations in life. Now that's a very minor one. I used to spend a lot of time on Kijiji because I have a hobby that I like to do, and there's collectibles that I need to get, and I often would use these tactics, right, to get people to sell to me at a good price, right? One of the common tactics is that all I have in my wallet is this much money, right, and I'll give you this much, and that's all I have to give, right? Very common sales tactic. Or if anybody of you, probably most of you here, because we live in Chinatown, we're Chinese, we've used the walkaway tactic, right? So basically, we go up to somebody, we don't like the price, so we walk away, and hopefully when we come back, they're going to give us a better price. And the idea here is that we're walking away, we're saying that we don't have to buy from you. But secretly, what we're saying is, we're going to buy from you. We're just trying to get the best price possible. Right? But the question is this the type of behavior that God desires from us in terms of a way in which we should be truthful and honest? Right? These are very small ways, but I want you to think about the meaning behind these things. What does it say about us? Right? That it says more about us that what we're trying to do is we're trying to get ourselves the best deal possible. I remember using some of these underhanded tactics one time and then working out the math, right? Meaning that I got so many of these collectibles and I paid a certain price and I dropped the price by a certain amount and it basically was saving $325, right? So to me, being honest and being truthful and basically being in danger of God's condemnation was worth $325 to me. I want you to think about that. Right? That you could actually mathematically work out what does this value worth to you? What is God's condemnation worth to you? What is being holy worth to you? And it scared me because I'm like, man, I only made $325. Like, if you're going to make an amount, it should be more than $100, right? But and I'm like, why did I do these things? Why did I say these things over such a small value? And we smile and we laugh, but think about this. The fact that we would do these things says something about us. It says something about the way that we understand God's desire for us and the way in which God sees the truth that we say in our lives. Secondly here, sometimes we tell white lies to get ahead financially, right? Sometimes we do this. We might, you know, mistaken some of the numbers in our tax return. We might mistake in some of the wording that we talk to people about, and we ultimately get a financial gain behind it. You know, Proverbs 19 verse 1 says this, "Better a poor person who walks in his integrity than one who is crooked in speech and is a fool." Right? And I wonder if we do these things, right? Because we want this small financial gain. A third thing is sometimes we embellish the truth, right? And I think that's the clearest one about this one is when you go to an interview. Right, if you go to an interview, you want to paint yourself in the best way possible, even when it's not true. You don't know how many times that I've done like mock interviews with people who've done a volunteer job, and they make it sound like they're a CEO of like a Fortune 500 company. Right? It's like, I've done this, I've taken care of 500 people, I was in contact with all these people. The embellishing of the truth is the same kind of idea, that the idea here is we're trying not to be as truthful as possible, but we're just trying to make ourselves look in the best light. We might do this for reports, right? So if your annual report comes in for your job and you have to justify certain numbers to your boss, you're going to change the numbers a little bit to make it look like things are much better than they actually are. And I want you to ask yourselves, do you think you're being truthful here? Like honestly being truthful. The last one, and I think I'm probably the one of the most guilty for this, is when we put up a facade before other Christians to make it seem like things are okay. Right? How many times when people have asked you, how are you doing? And it's very easy to just say, I'm fine. I'm good. But secretly inside, you are writhing in pain. You're struggling with things in your life. There are people that you're just not right with, that your prayer life is all a shamble, your Bible reading is all a shamble, and yet things are okay. Right? Is this truthful? I found that when our goal and when our object of our life is to be truthful as possible, it almost feels like when you like unring a rug, unring like a cloth, right? So when you wring a cloth because you get it wet and you want to get all the water out, you kind of wring the cloth together. I kind of feel like that when I feel like I'm misleading people, right? I feel like I'm being twisted around and I feel like I'm not quite right. But then when I feel that I take the attitude that I want to be truthful as possible in all the situations, I feel like that cloth is now being unwrung, and I feel much better. Now, at first, I'm not going to lie. At first, it feels like it's unnatural, right? That I feel like I'm not getting all these deals, that all these people are benefiting. Why am I not benefiting? And it feels really odd. But then after a period of time, it actually feels right. It feels like I get it. I understand why it needs to be this way. In fact, I think this is the way in which God has, the reason why he has called us to be truthful, not just because it glorifies him, but because for us too, there are benefits. I've listed a number of things here that I think that benefits us today. So number one is that I think that as Christians, having integrity or being honest is now a part of who we are. Colossians chapter 3, verse 9 and 10 says, "Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator." Did you realize that being a Christian today, that with our new self, that being part of this is being truthful and honest now today? Right? That is a part of what God desires, a part of what we are now putting on. And it now goes against this new nature, this new self that we've now put on. So every time we do this, we actually do this against ourselves. And you could probably bear witness to this, right? Like, I've known people in my life who have trouble sleeping because they're trying to remember all the lies that they've told, because tomorrow they've got to see these people again. And there might be some of us here that we could think about the different ways in which we have told these little lies to people, and we're still paying for them today because we still have to put on that face that things are still okay, that these are things that we've actually said, that everything is great. But what if God's intention for us is just to let those things go? To let things be what they actually are, and to tell people and to tell each other what honestly these things actually are. I wonder if there would be a change in the way that we feel from day to day. If you are encouraged by the sermon today, I would encourage you then to try to spend 1 month, an entire month, to make every conversation, everything that comes out of your mouth, and everything that you do as truthful as possible. And then come tell me at the end of the month how you feel. Is there a noticeable difference in the way that you felt at the beginning of the month to the end of the month? So I think in the first way in which we look at this, this is a part of the way who we are, right? And now putting on the new self, what we were meant to do and meant to enjoy. Secondly, we should earnestly desire to be truthful, because this is what God finds glorifying. Because we are being more like him when we do this. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 10 and 12. "For whoever desires to love and see good days, let him keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil." When we're being truthful, we are being more and more like God. Right? As the Bible continues, keeps telling us that the God is truth. And when we practice truth, we're being more and more like him. And this is what makes him happy. This is what glorifies him to see his people doing, is to live in truth, to be truth, to be truthful to other people. Lastly, if we continue to practice deceit and are looking always just to benefit ourselves, this could be a sign that we really weren't saved to begin with. Luke chapter 6, verse 45, "The good person out of the good treasures of his heart produces good, and the evil person out of the evil treasures produces evil, for out of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaks." So when you look at your life, and you look at the way you interact with people, what is your chief aim? Is your chief aim to benefit yourself at all possible, even at the cost of truth? If you save 3.25 or 2 nickels or 2 quarters, is that what sanctification or God's desire, is that what it's worth to you? These are real questions I really think that we need to ask ourselves, right? That as we live our lives, what is the aim of our life? What is it that we're aiming to do? What is our aim and purpose of why we do the things that we do? The easiest one is to honor and to benefit ourselves. This is easy, right? Because that's a natural thing. That's something that we automatically think about when we are people. The much more difficult is if our aim is higher, if our aim is spiritual. Now, I'm not claiming that I have the perfect understanding of what exactly we need to be doing here in terms of all the things that you're going through. I don't know all your situations in which you have to be a part of. But I do know that truth is a part of who God is, and truth is a part of God's people. And that without it, we put ourselves in very desperate situations, and we set ourselves and our hearts in places that we really don't want to go. Let's conclude for today. If we look at all of our social swearing, it always goes back to God. Whether you swear by God or not, if you swear by anything, it goes back to God. And God makes this very clear in this passage. And because of that, our second point, we need to be very careful to let our answers be simply yes or no in those situations, and not to add anything extra, because anything extra, as Jesus says, is from evil. And it's also important to remember that it's not just that these are minor things when we use God's name in such an irreverent way, but it's worthy of condemnation. Like that should have weight for us. The fact that he would use such words and God would use such words to say that it bears condemnation, that it is worth wrath. Point number three here is that God desires us to be truthful in all circumstances. Right? I want you to think about your lives. I want you to think of your interactions with your friends, your family, your coworkers, your boss, even the church. Is your aim in these interactions, are they always to be as truthful as possible? Now, that doesn't mean to be long-winded. Those are two different things. But to be as truthful as possible in those circumstances. My very last point here is to love truth. I strongly believe that we cannot live a life of being truthful if we don't love the truth that we're telling. If we don't love the life of being truthful, if we don't love the God who is being truthful, who is truth. When you think about the truth, how much do you love it? Do you love the truth even when it's hard? Do you love the truth even when it doesn't benefit you? Do you love the truth when you lose $325 over a deal? How much do you love truth? And is it worth more to you than your own self-satisfaction? Is it worth more than your self-pride? If you're a believer today, and we talk about this idea of oaths and telling the truth and things that we say, I hope that our aim and our goal of our entire life is to love truth. Because if we love truth, that we will look to be truthful in every situation. Coming back to the song, the thing about worship music today, about the idea of, does it matter to God? Yes, I think every word that comes out of our mouths matters to God. Now, thankfully, we have Christ who will save us from ourselves, and for that we can make a mistake, that we could come to him as children, that we can beg for forgiveness, and he would grant us healing, he would grant us forgiveness, lovingly so. But let's not make the mistake here to think that he doesn't care. In fact, he cares very deeply the things that we say, and he will hold us to things that we say. How seriously should you take the words that come into your mouth? Very seriously. And very lastly now that we established, I think, that it matters to God how he looks at speech and how we should talk, the question is, are we willing to change? And this is the big question, right? So we talked about oaths, we talked about reading the Bible, this is what the Bible says, and if you agree to what was talked today, are we willing to change today? And I hope that our answer will always be yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan, for the message this morning. I think we've all been challenged by this. You know, I think for a lot of the young people out there,